You're listening to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. It happened in a Detroit alley in 1967. Detroiter John Hall and an accomplice beat a man who later died of his injuries. John Hall was convicted of first-degree murder and received a mandatory sentence of life in prison without parole. He was 17 years old. His accomplice was never even arrested. But John Hall's future changed with two landmark rulings from the U.S. Supreme Court, rulings that outlawed mandatory sentences of life without parole for juveniles. And on February 2nd, at age 67, John Hall walked out of a Michigan prison with virtually nothing to help him start his new life as a free man.
90 days before I got out, they're supposed to have all the stuff that you need ready for you in the reentry program in prison. When I got out, I didn't have anything. Only thing I had was $1.37 and a Social Security card.
And no birth certificate, which means no state ID card, no driver's license.
If you don't have the birth certificate, you through.
There are over 360 of these so-called juvenile lifers in Michigan prisons today. John Hall is one of only five who've been resentenced and released since the Supreme Court rulings. What is freedom like after 50 years in prison? Accompanied by his lawyer, Valerie Newman, of the Michigan State Appellate Defender Office, John Hall sat down with me for a difficult conversation, talking about where he went wrong, what life was like through those decades in Michigan prisons, and how he hopes to keep other young people from making the mistakes that he made all those years ago. We started with what it's like to be a free man in 2017.
When I went to prison, the only cell phones I seen was on Star Trek. Beam me up, Scotty. Computer, do this. So, to simplify how I view it, I always say it's science fiction because it's reality, but back then it was science fiction. And I got to learn everything all over again, like she be telling me and everybody that's helping me. I got to take baby steps, you know, and it's not been easy. Little things that everybody take for granted, you know. Swipe, give your card to the, your debit card to the storekeeper. He swipe it or whatever he do, and you got to punch it in. I had to learn that, you know. Cars the same. I'm talking about on the outside, but on the inside, they little things that everybody take for granted.
That constantly you're being reminded that you've been gone all these years.
Right. Constantly. I got a good support system called my attorney, Ms. Newman. If it don't be for them, I'd be lost. I couldn't even use the phone.
Because that's all changed. There's no more rotary phones.
Right. I had a person that tell me, said, well, call me, man, call me. I said, okay. Because I was too embarrassed to say I didn't know how to use a phone. He said, you going to call me for real? I said, come here, man. Show me how to work this. You know, I built up the courage, you know, because I felt like that's a step forward. And he showed me. So, and I'm beginning to learn. I still haven't learned and mastered it.
These baby steps you're taking, at least you have control. I'm wondering, what does it feel like to let you're the one decides what you want to do and when you want to do it and who you want to see for the first time in like 50 years. How does that feel to have that power back?
It's unbelievable. Yeah, that was a good question you asked me. It's unbelievable. Another reason that was a good question is because I was 3 months past my 16th birthday when I got sentenced. So I never had the chance to experience society as an adult. So that was a real good question you asked me.
What does it feel like?
It feel good. It feel real, real good. And it was something I thought I'd never feel again.
Now, I know now you're living in a homeless shelter.
Right.
Because there's nobody around. It's been all these years.
Right.
Your mother long passed.
Right.
What's that like?
Seeing everybody gone. That I left when I was 17, actually 16, Now I'm 67 years old. If I didn't have the support I had from my attorney and the support system that she surrounded me with, I wouldn't have made it. But I am taking baby steps, and I'm going to make it because I want to and because, like I say, she done surrounded me with the people that I'm comfortable with, that I don't have to feel embarrassed about nothing. And like she always tell me, if we going too fast or they going too fast, let them know. Don't hold back. But coming out when I want to after 9 o'clock, being on my own all day, not being in the environment that I was in, where it's 13 gangs in one prison. And like you said, being free, ain't nothing like it.
John, tell us, what was your childhood like?
I just found out a few things a couple of days ago when I did get my birth certificate. I didn't even know my father's name. First name. I knew his last name, but I didn't know his first name. And I'm a junior. He only had one son, one child. That was me. And my mother raised me. She worked for different people 5 days a week, 7 days a week, doing domestic work. So basically the streets raised me because she was gone all the time. But she did what she could do as far as trying to raise a son and provide. But the streets really raised me. So I went to school and did all that, and all the things other kids did, you know, and got in trouble.
How old were you when you started getting in trouble?
About 13 or 14.
And there you were, as you say, 3 months past your, you know, into your a brand new 17-year-old, and you're being told life in prison, no parole. What went in your heart and your mind when you heard those
words? Okay, the reason I looked at my attorney and smiled, because it's one of the things that I talk about that I'm getting stronger and speaking about, because I usually break down when I talk about this subject. The judge told me when I got found guilty, "Mr. Hall, you have been found guilty by a jury of your peers. You are throwaway. You are unfit for society. You are a predator. And I hereby sentence you to the State of Department of Corrections for the rest of your natural entire life." By me being so young, I knew it was bad. When I swirled around in that seat at that desk and looked at my mother's face, please. Excuse me. When I looked at my mother's face, I knew it was bad, real, real bad. Took me back to the county jail. My mother came to see me. And she said, "Don't worry, baby. The Lord gonna be with you. Things gonna work out." And it did, because of my attorney, Miss Valerie Newman, 50 years later. But it did. But she wasn't around to see it. And that's what hurt. So I guess that I can convey to you what that day was like for me. And then they take me to quarantine. I'm in the world's largest world prison.
Jackson.
Of Jackson. And they told it. told them to get him out here. He's too young to be in this prison. So they sent me to Gladiator School. The name is what caught you up in your mind, is what it really was. Gladiator School. Michigan Reformatory. 4 days later, guy come up to me and say, hey, man, we was in school. He said, hey, man, that guy there just poured some water all over your papers. Your schoolwork. So I said, to myself, I said, so what? But the guy heard him. So he come down to where I was. And he say, I heard what he just told you. What you gonna do about it? So I walked up closer to him, chest to chest. And I whispered in his ear. I told him, just leave me alone, man. I got natural life. I said, now, once we get started, ain't going to be no holy. Wait a minute, break it up. Here come the police. We're going to end this. He turned and walked away and never said another word to me, and I never had no problems until later on in different prisons. But had I not did that, being in that Gladiator School, ain't no telling what line it would have. And then mom scuffling, trying to talk to the lawyers, and she ain't got no money. So I was trying to get to Jackson because they had the factories. Dad making $400, $500, $600 a month. Dad on. I don't know what you call them places, but where they would do experiments on the human body, called Up Johns and Park Davis, where they create different drugs and stuff. And you could make money by letting them inject stuff in you and all this and all that. And the more severe whatever they was trying to cure was, the more money you got. You seen guys with arms cut off, spangles cut off, trying to get out of prison because they got natural life. I thought about it. Because I'm already dead.
So you felt like, what have I got to lose?
I'm a little kid. Right. And finally, I got called down to the factory. Yep, the license plate factory. And I was making money.
So you had that job.
Yeah, I had a job. I was making me $300-$400 a month. Every 90 days, they'll give you a bonus, a percentage bonus. And I was paying prison lawyers to work on my case because I didn't have enough to get my paid attorney. They were too expensive. So I had prison attorneys. We got some of them good. I was, got guys out, so I hired them. Then they closed it down. Hmm. What do I do?
Yeah.
So I started working in the kitchen.
And you took classes too, didn't you?
Oh, yeah. I took a lot of classes. Yeah. I can't name them all.
You got an associate's degree, right?
Yes, I do.
And I understand you did a lot of religious certification?
Right, a lot.
Why did you choose those courses? What was the big picture for you doing that?
Well, I got my college degree because haven't anyone in my family ever been to college. And my mother mentioned it one day. I said, well, Mama, I'm going to be the first one to do it. And after she died, I remembered that promise. Even though she wasn't around physically, I was going to keep that promise to her. And that's what motivated me to take college. The spiritual and religious classes come from the fact that I am religious, and I felt the best way for me to tell anybody anything, you got to have authority to say it. You just can't say something to somebody and they don't, you can't show it to them because people believe what they see. So I started doing that, and then I started getting them thinking for a change, a new way of thinking, Cage Your Rage, Chance for Life, all these different programs, because when I look back at myself, I didn't like the John that I seen in the past.
You wanted to be a different John.
Right. I had to reinvent myself. I didn't have nobody to look up to when I come to prison, a little kid, because I didn't want to be like them. I was going with the flow, so to speak, but I didn't want to be like them. And then when I really had a chance to sit down and think, another thing that saved me, this is very important. Remember what that judge said to me? He messed me up psychologically for at least 20 years because for the rest of your natural entire life, you never forget those words. But when I stop and I'm seeing people leaving prison with life sentences, I said, wait a minute, man, that judge lied to you. You can get out. You know what I'm saying? I had heard it, but I didn't believe it till I'm seeing guys that I know personally get out. I said, wait a minute, man. You got to change.
Tomorrow on Stateside, John Hall talks to us about the crime that sent him to prison in 1967. He'll talk about the guilt that he still lives with, despite receiving forgiveness from the widow of his victim. And he tells us what his plans are with his second chance at freedom.
It's going to be inside of me for the rest of my life. And I hope that in some way that somebody will hear me and I can save a life.
That's tomorrow here on Stateside.